Welcome back, everyone, to the Prepared Mindset Podcast. I'm your host, Austin, and man, we are T-minus 1 week and counting from the election. I would really love to talk about something other than that in one of these intros, and maybe I will in a couple of weeks, but obviously with that being so close, and obviously the downstream implications, and impacts that the outcome of that evening, that day, I should say, right, are really going to carry. It's hard to talk about a lot else, honestly. It's a really big deal, you guys. I say this all the time. I implore people to get out and vote. We basically have election cycles every 2 years at different levels of government, and it's how our democracy, how our democratic republic, rather, how it functions is based off of you as a citizen voicing your opinion, making your choice, voting and participating in the elective process. I highly recommend, I mean, and obviously that's just my recommendation and opinion. You guys can tell me to go pound sand, and that's totally fine. I respect your opinion to do that because we have voting rights in this country that have allowed us to remain, at least for the time being, free with freedom of speech. So pending election coming up, you know, we're going to see what's what. I'm sure all of us will be very, very closely glued to the TV screen and the numbers as that night goes on. I will, you know, be doing what I do. I have an interview set that night. And after that, I will be jumping on the Discord with John and Josh and watching, you know, the updates roll in. In other news, you guys, our YouTube channel, for those of you that didn't know that we had one, we do actually have a YouTube channel. And we actually did a fantastic video, if I do say so myself, on the things you can do to be prepared in the event that you think some weird stuff's going to happen around next Tuesday. You know, whether that's people getting upset and blocking roads or getting upset and throwing bricks and pipes and rocks and sticks and things like we saw a couple years ago or 8 years ago with the 2016 election, right? People like to misbehave and be, you know, varying degrees of clowns when things go a certain way politically. I can't say which way that is because people have reacted poorly in both directions. So it's kind of a losing effort, and if you were to try to pinpoint one problem there, unless you want to get really tinfoily, which I don't. But the video is doing great. You guys are seeming to really enjoy it, getting great traction. If you guys can head on over to our YouTube channel, that's outstanding. It helps us out a lot. Check out those videos, give them a like, give them a share. We're going to be basically, we're already working. I'll give you guys a little insider peek here. We're actually already planning out to do video releases through Q1 of next year. So getting on a regular cadence where you guys can expect new content from us either weekly or bi-weekly for the next 4 or 5 months to get us through November, December, all the way up through March with different topics and things like that. And additionally, if there's stuff you guys want to talk about, things you want to see, you can always message us over Instagram. You can always shoot us an email on whatever you want us to talk about. Or if you guys actually want to have quick access to that information, you guys can join our Patreon page. That's actually a fantastic way to support what we do here. But also, if you want on-demand content, if you want access to John or Josh or myself directly, you can join the Patreon. It's patreon.com/prepared_mindset_pod. And you get access to videos, you get exclusive episodes, there's blog posts, there's drills, there's target downloads, there's all kinds of stuff. And even if you guys don't sign up, if you become a public member, you can actually access our cold start drill and things like that that we make available on the Patreon page. And again, every bit of that support comes right back here to the podcast to help us keep doing what we're doing here. So whether it's things like, you know, upgrading to better microphones, replacing my laptop. Last year it was to offset the cost of our trip to HCA in Pennsylvania, which we did again this year. It's outstanding, you guys, but your support goes a hell of a long way, and we really, really appreciate it. Now, getting into this week's discussion, you guys know we work really hard. We're gonna bring some great people to you in these interview discussions, and this week is no exception. It's my guest this week is Jake Hosevar, who is part of Redline Consulting and Defender Series Training Group. And actually, Jake does a whole heck of a lot. I actually had to get a list worked up here. So he does have a regular retail job, but he's going to be changing jobs soon into the firearms industry. I'm not going to give that away. I don't know how much he wants us to know about that, but if he gets into it, maybe we'll find that out. Also helps run a family business, works in law enforcement as a police officer, and Redline Consulting with his partner, John, and is the lead firearms instructor for Defender Series. And if Defender Series sounds familiar to you guys, that's because Troy Van Oostendorp. I always have to make sure I get that last name right for Troy. Great guy, has been a guest on here on Prepared Mindset twice. The last episode we had, I believe it was the beginning of this year, was a great discussion around CQB and the application of different methodologies and mindsets and tactics and things like that. Really, really enjoyed that discussion. Even, you know, all these months later, I still look back on that one fondly as one of my absolute favorite guest interactions was with Troy at Defender Series. So Jake's tied in with those dudes, and this should be an awesome, awesome discussion, you guys. But before I get over to this week's guest, you guys, we are a sponsored podcast. We work with some absolutely stellar companies out there in the firearms industry that provide great services and outstanding products. And we want to make sure that, you know, as supporters of ours, we support them and let you guys know that these are fantastic places you can go to spend your money if you're looking to get some gear, if you're looking to be better prepared. And there is no better resource, especially if you are looking for night vision, than our friends over at Custom Night Vision. Their website, obviously, is customnightvision.com. You can head over to the site. You can check it out for yourself. All kinds of good features, all kinds of good products built into that website, including a Insight chat window in the lower right-hand corner where you can actually reach out and talk to one of the crew members, whether it's Trevor or Kevin or maybe even Ben over at Custom Night Vision, and you can fire away. You can ask your questions. If you have concerns, if you don't even know where to start, maybe they can direct you to a good resource for information on how night vision works, where you should be focusing your interest, where you should be focusing your money, and what your concerns really should be when you're getting into either your first monocular device or your first binocular device, whether it's a PVS-14, which so many of us start with because it's such a great and, you know, entry-level option in green phosphor and white phosphor, whether the tubes are from L3 or Elbit or Photonis or any of the other brands out there that we don't have to get into, right? The guys at Custom are there to give you the most transparent buying experience possible. And if you're looking to upgrade, if you have a PVS-14, if you've been out there, you've been rolling with your crew, you're ready to move out of your PVS-14 and you're ready to jump into binoculars and you just are having a hard time getting that money together, or maybe, man, you just got that itch and you just cannot wait any longer. I mean, depending on the itch, you might want to see a doctor. But you can actually send in your PVS-14. We did this with Josh over the summer here. And you can actually have them match you a tube with the existing tube you have and then swap you into a housing. So that way you're paying for the housing and one set of optics and one tube instead of two sets of optics and two tubes. And if you guys know anything about night vision, the money is in your tubes. The housings, honestly, they all have a lot of great pros, cons, and features. And, you know, Custom does a bunch of great videos over on YouTube, on their YouTube channel, where you guys can go look that up for yourselves. So the housing, I don't want to say it's inconsequential, but really where you want to spend your money is the tubes. And if you're only buying one, you're going to save yourself some money. So head on over to customnightvision.com. You can contact them if you're doing a housing swap, a brand new purchase, or maybe you just have some questions. Again, you guys, it is customnightvision.com. Also want to say a very big thank you to our friends over at 100 Concepts, everybody. Again, 100concepts.com is their website, and they make a ton of very cool products, including their pack scrim, their helmet scrim, the caps, right? So that's a scope cap, a light cap, their Pro Cap series, which actually has a really unique way of combining a anti-reflective hex grid device or anti-reflective device, ARD, whatever you want to call it, with their scope cap. And it all attaches over, you know, bungee cord, really. So rubber band and a bungee cord. And it's outstanding. Very rugged, very durable, really smart design. You know, Jonah and the guys over there, they're great dudes making some great products. Again, the website, 100concepts.com. Go check it out for yourself. Don't just take my word for it. You guys will find something that you need there. I guarantee it, whether it's their scope caps, light caps, the chem lights, their sling hook, all kinds of good stuff. And they're always coming out with more, better products, better versions of their products. They listen to their customers. They're an absolutely outstanding company. One more time, you guys, it is 100concepts.com. So, like I said, everybody, there are a couple of great companies, great sponsors that we love working with. And honestly, you know, years ago, probably never would have even dreamed that would have been possible, but super happy that it has and very happy to be able to recommend them to you guys all, just as I would with my closest friends and my family. great companies. They are not going to do you guys wrong. I know there's a lot of stuff that floats around out there on the internet, and it's tough in this industry and tough in this community to know which companies are the good ones and which ones are just out there to make a buck. And what I love about working with Ben and Kevin and Trevor over at Custom, as well as Jonah and the guys over at 100, is they are real dudes. They're out there doing the shooting, they're out there doing the training, and they're working really hard every day to make sure that they bring the best products possible and the best customer support possible to all of you. But like I mentioned, we have a great episode this week. I'm going to sit down with Jake. We're going to get into all sorts of stuff. He comes from a, sounds like a pretty diverse background and is spending time in a lot of the fields, which many of us find to be interesting as well as pertinent to our own personal journeys and our own personal efforts of self-improvement and development, both from a student perspective and a learning perspective, but also as a trainer, as an educator. So we're going to get into a whole lot today, you guys. Stay tuned. I'm sure you're going to dig it. And without any further delays, we're just going to jump right on over. Here we go. Jake, welcome on, man. I mean, it's only the third second. We've been working on this for a minute. I'm happy we pulled it together. Yeah. We pulled it together. We made it happen. It's going to be good, man. I'm excited.
Yeah, me too. Awesome. Thank you for having me on, man.
For sure. For sure. Let's start with who you are, man. I mean, I know you and I have talked a little bit, and I think you're within a couple hours of me. Unfortunately, mm-hmm. You reside in Ohio. I won't hold that against you, but...
you're going to crack up. I am actually from Michigan. I still have my 586 area code and everything.
Wait, where were you? Okay, that's my area code. Where were you from originally?
Shelby Township.
Oh, dude.
Yeah, I was like, you probably know where that's at.
So. 20 minutes from me. Like, You're just the other side of Hall Road. Like, I'm in, I grew up in Clinton Township, like 16 and Harper.
Oh, okay. I know exactly where that's at. Yeah.
Went to Lance Cruz and everything.
Mm-hmm. My man. All right. Small world. Look at that.
Yeah.
But, so I'm Jake Hosevar. A little bit about me in terms of like what I do for work and my background. Right now, I have an assortment of jobs. Okay. So my full-time job, I live in the corporate world. That's changing pretty soon. I'll be switching over to Harrington Arms, becoming like a YouTube personality for them. Also helping out with sales, customer service, and other projects they have going around the company. I am super excited about that to finally make my way into the firearms industry. I'm also a part-time police officer. I got out of doing law enforcement full-time about 2 years ago now. I've been a cop for 4.5 years in total. I also did 6 years in the Army National Guard as a 12 Bravo combat engineer. And then I run a drive-in theater with my family in Warren, Ohio. It's been there since 1950. My great grandfather built it. Oh, and damn. It's been single family owned ever since, man. It's been passed down generation to generation. Out of my list of jobs, that's debatably my favorite. I'm very close to my family. My parents and my family and my friends are the reason for where I'm at. So they're very important to me, and that business is very important to me. And then I'm also the lead firearms instructor for Defender Series Training Group. And I've been doing that for about 8 or 9 months. I've been a firearms instructor in this industry for about 7 or 8 years now. So I've been in that realm for quite a while.
How'd you get connected with the guys over at Defender Series? Because Troy and them, they're out in Virginia Beach, right?
Yeah. And honestly, dude, we're like completely different. I shouldn't say completely different mindsets in shooting, as we're actually very similar, but like in terms of our practices, like they're very much CQB guys, as you know, and I am not a tactics guy at all. When they found out, when I left the previous company I was at, Troy shot me a DM, and we just had a phone call, and he kind of gave me an idea what the company's about, what they're about. And it was very attractive to me. They're not about, looking at people like a lot of these instructors in this industry, looking at people like paychecks. They want to, make people better. Their primary focus, I shouldn't say primary, but like they very much like to help cops. And I very much in line with that because, being a cop for as long as I have 5 years, but even in that short period of time, the amount of mistakes and issues I see just from a firearms point of view, like leaving the rest of it out, needs like serious help. They're definitely not getting it from their department. They're definitely not getting it from the state. When he kind of told me what the company's about, what their goals are, what their mission is, and how they treat that, I was like, I, To me, I have found like a group of dudes that I'm going to stick with, and that's all that matters, dude. Money is, they're very much in line with building the program, being who you are to do it, attracting the right people for the right reasons. If you, I believe if you do your part with this, the money will come. And quite frankly, I'm not worried about the money with it. It's just, it is, it's super fun, man. I'm sure you've taught some stuff yourself, or at least have been to classes. I know you have. It's a very fun environment to be in, man. It is also very rewarding to be working for yourself, to be somewhere like that was once a hobby for you, and now you're, helping make other people better. As corny as that sounds, it's super fun, man.
No,
Like
it's a
in,
great feeling. As someone who used to, I used to teach high school marching band musicians, right? And seeing them, even younger kids, right? So 13 to 18, pick stuff up and everything. It's a really cool experience, a very rewarding feeling, and I've had a little bit of opportunity to teach. I hate referring to myself as like a teacher or an instructor in any capacity.
I understand. Yeah, I get
I've
that.
helped guys on the range, because usually when you start saying like, oh yeah, I go teach dudes, they're like, well, what is your experience? What's your
Yeah,
resume? I'm
it's
like,
a dick measuring
whoa,
thing immediately. Yeah.
hold on. Like, I'm not taking money for it. I'm literally just helping share like what I've learned. And like we get together on a weekly basis, and we train CQB after Orion rolled through, left a huge like I'll use the phrase like a cultural impression. So we went back to the same facility we took for class, and then we had people coming in asking questions like, will you teach me? We should I'm like, well, yeah, I mean, I'll show you what I know. Like, understand it's probably pretty limited in the grand scheme, but it gets you further than where you're at. I'm happy to help you out. I mean, for the most part. So it's a super cool feeling when people start like connecting dots and realizing, they see themselves get better.
And I also forgot one thing, because I'm sorry, I have 5 jobs. It's very easy to lose track of them. So the other thing I left out was I own a media company called Redline Consulting. I run it with my partner, John Schuerman, who I believe is like one of the best cameramen in the industry. One of the best photographers and videographers, 100%. He has showed me everything I know with a camera. And that's been a whole other like journey of mine that's been super fun. We just recently became media vendors for Metro Health, and that's been awesome, dude. Like that was for only starting this company a year ago, growing it to where it is. I'm super, but we're both stoked about it. And eventually there, a training division will be added to Redline, but it'll be just mostly for small stuff. I very much like my position at Defender Series, and I very much enjoy those guys, and I don't plan on ever leaving that anytime soon. So.
That's like something in the industry too. Like, having good media is basically a requirement at this point. And I can tell you, as somebody who's trying to grow outside of just like a podcast, right? Or in your instance, maybe it's just as just a training company, right? The media
Yeah.
side of it, so photos and video are like, they're almost like a required thing if you want to, really grow and expand and branch out, unless you have some kind of unless you work in like graphic design and you can do all kinds of like that. I don't have cover art. Like, I know some of these guys, like I always marvel at like the Art and War podcast, and they're like, they have cool drawings and stuff for every episode, and I'm like, man, I'm just over here with the same logo just every time. Like and I'm okay. Like I'll roll with it.
Yeah, I mean, I agree, dude. I feel like it's in this industry, what you need is media and word of mouth. I think word of mouth will definitely succeed or exceed media. I mean, if you look at guys like Ben Stoger like doesn't do media. I think he just records everything on a iPhone, it looks like. And because of word of mouth and who he is and who he's his curriculum and who he's carved himself into as an instructor, like he doesn't need to advertise it. People know. So, I mean, that's a di not to delineate off that, but you get what I mean.
No, yeah, it's an essential part of the process, and I think even more so because of how social media has been throttled down, right? Like, we all know,
Dude,
anybody listening to this, the struggles, the shadow bans, like even guys who aren't out there, I have friends, they're not out there to like grow a presence or a footprint, and everyone just shares the annoying screenshots like, your stuff can't be recommended, or you can't use features. And it's like I've even seen some of these guys out here, like Lucas Burnley, who makes pocket knives for a living. Not like huge aggressive deals made for fighting, but like I really like Lucas's designs. Like his page is very much about like, hey, let's walk around my shop. Like I'll explain what these tools are and how I do this and that. And I'm like, this is kind of neat. And then he gets hit with a strike or whatever on Instagram. And it's like, seriously? It's a pocket knife. Like, okay. So the part, like you have to have attractive media that, like you said, like that word of mouth or what you would really call it. You have to have people sharing your stuff to each other. Like,
Yeah, reach. You gotta have reach.
yeah, it's critical for growth. And man, it sucks right now in this space. I mean, we got an election in a week. Maybe that'll fix it. Probably not, but we can always hope.
Yeah, dude. We'll see.
So how did you like, so let's start with like kind of the beginning. How did you get involved with like teaching or just shooting in general? Like, where did it all start for you?
So it all started for me at Achilles Hill Tactical. Rick shot me a I was a student first. I was a student for like three or four classes, and then he shot me a DM and was like, "Hey, dude, come shoot with us sometime." And basically from there, I think that was like 2018. From then on, I was an assistant instructor up until August of 23, I believe, August of 2023. Honestly, dude, it was like by shit luck. Like I didn't apply
Just
to
kind of happened.
anything. Yeah, I mean, it was literally just sent me a DM, and obviously I had to do a ton of homework on my end, because I was still like very much in my training phase, now going to teaching, law enforcement and civilians. And I took it pretty seriously because one, your name's attached to it. And two, like, especially in this industry, if you're the guy putting out bad information, like you're gonna get ousted immediately.
Ooh.
You know what I
Yeah,
mean?
there's pl and then they and those video clips always go viral. Like the one I always come back to is the weird Asian looking guy, and that may sound racist, but I'm pretty sure he was Asian and he was telling people why they should not carry their rifle with a sling because it could be taken from them and used to choke them out. And
I
then
heard about that,
I remember thinking that one was hilarious. And I've told this story before, but I was like, yeah, no one's gonna believe that. That's just ridiculous. Then I actually went to a class and had somebody ask the instructor about the dangers of wearing your sling as a necklace versus like, and I'm like, oh no, wait, really? This guy believed it. Like, oh shit. All right. There, those
Dude,
people
yeah,
happen.
I and like that reason too, like that's why I try my best not to let this stuff get to my head, man, because of like that situation right there. Like I'm not trying to shit on myself, but like I'm pretty much like a nobody in this industry. And the that even that being said, like I could say something and there would be somebody to listen to it. And I do take that pretty serious. I mean, like look at Lucas. Like I guarantee you, if he said something stupid, there would be somebody out there, like Lucas Botkin with T-Rex, like there would be
Yeah.
somebody out there to follow it, and that's
It's a
crazy to think
powerful
about for
thing.
one. Yeah, it is it's a powerful thing, man. I don't take that very lightly, because especially with the amount of people I have like asking me questions, whether it's just like emails or DMs, I didn't really realize how many people are like watching or paying attention to what I do until that started happening. And that's when I was like, okay, like I can't lead people wrong here, and I think part of this and the whole instruction thing too is you have to stay a student. Like you can't just, got my instructor tab, it's good to go. Like I'm clean. I'm gonna just start teaching classes now. Like, dude, as well as I do, a certification is just a piece of paper. Your experience, your curriculum, who you are as a teacher, and your ability to convey useful information to people for them to go home and make themselves better shooters are what matters. My resume doesn't matter. I mean, really, even the experience I have doesn't matter. Who I am as a shooter and the usefulness I give you, like the what I'm able to teach you in a class is what matters. Nothing else.
And it's tough like that. So I mean, because we just talked about the importance of media, but that's why like you have to be able to convey more than just, I mean, this isn't 1999 anymore, right? Like we have resources, YouTube, Instagram, some of the other platforms people use, whatever, to like vet out instructors. It's, I mean, a resume looks good, and guy, and I'm guys that say that have SEAL, Ranger, or whatever, like they're always going to draw because it's attractive and maybe some people know what they're looking at, but It's one of those things that as soon as you start really getting into, and I'm sure you found this as a student as well, and continue to encounter it just being on the internet, right? Guys build the longest resume they can because everyone assumes that bigger is better, no pun intended. And I started looking into some of these companies. So I was never in the military. I don't know what a lot of these schoolhouses and things are. But looking at companies and you start like lesser known ones, smaller ones, and you see these guys, like we have five instructors and they list out all of their credentials and it's like 18 different line items. And I'm going through it with John and Josh here, who are both former active duty army and now full-time guard. And they're like, that's basic training. And like next, that's basic training. Like out of the 18, they did two things that were above and beyond normal basic training, but they just spelled it out. So it looked more impressive. And it's like, I don't know if that's re and on the same side, I don't want to say like people who don't have that long resume, like you, they can still be good instructors. Like you can still, and there's a lot of guys out there that didn't serve in the military or law enforcement and are fantastic shooters. More importantly, though, they're fantastic communicators. Like there is an art to being able to like make shit make sense. And that doesn't come from any kind of anything other than, well, I mean, you can study it, you can get better at it, but it doesn't inherently just come like, well, I was on the SWAT team for 18 years. Like, good for you. If you don't know how to talk to people, you're probably not going to be a great teacher. You're just not.
I completely agree, man. And actually, we're kind of seeing that as an industry as a whole. And I think people are catching on that shooting is shooting. Like whether you're on the stage of real life or, a stage on the range, like shooting is shooting. It does not matter where it's at. And that's why a lot of these people are gravitating towards competition shooters. I mean, shit, dude, even like these higher up military units, like in the Army, Marines, they're pulling guys like JJ and stuff like that because JJ Rikaza, because they're able to teach him how to shoot. Like it's really just that simple. Like you don't need to know anything else. Like there is no tactical shooting versus competition shooting. It's just shooting. The fundamentals are the fundamentals. They do not change. Only the tactics and the situation may change. The shooting does not.
Yeah,
Very much a believer in that.
it's about the application of the skill set, like knowing it, and that's a software thing, like 100%. And for better or for worse, right? That's I think where some people get a little bit raw about some things, but it's yeah, to your point. I mean, knowing how to effectively run a gun doesn't change because your environment changes. Your situation drives how you may apply that skill,
Yeah,
which
and
is
like
different.
let's not blow off tactics, right? Like what I'm not saying, like just because you're a good shooter,
Oh,
you're going to be a
no.
CQB god. Like those are two different, realms, and for a good reason. We in my opinion, we have two different subsections of shooting. You have tactics, and then you have performance. I don't think one does not overrule the other. But that being said, a good shooter who is, I would say, probably your most realistic civilian, your average cop, or your average military guy, they should be a blend of both. And
Oh,
I
yeah.
think you are as well. You guys, I've seen you push performance. It's not all just like slow as smooth as fast, type of shit. And like
No,
you're in or I'm going out with that.
yeah, no, it's not linear and it's all interconnected. I mean, you talk about competition shooting. Competition shooting is like is solid fundamentals and it's information processing, at its distilled core, which you could argue is like a huge part of CQB. You know what I mean? Like information processing. Can you idea target? How fastly can you engage that? Is it all of it? No, there's a lot of methodology and thought process and different kinds of thought processing. But if you can function well at that, you have a leg up on somebody who has never done any of it before. So it's all relative. But certainly yeah, to your point, like we're not I would never prioritize one over the other or we used to in this community have that real strong dichotomy. There was like the competition guys and there was the tactical guys.
Wasn't even
And
that long ago either, man.
like 10 years ish. Yeah.
I would say pre-2020 it was like that, in my opinion. In this community, I felt like pre-2020 it was very much like that.
Yeah, I mean they get it. I mean, people get it really ingrained and we still fight those battles,
Oh,
where
hell yeah.
people don't want to they don't want to adopt a practice or an idea from the competition world because that they've just done it their way in the tactical application or as a police officer. Something as simple as like a canted mag holder, like it is proven to be faster. Now, if you don't care because you don't train and you don't want to see that there's actual like solid data to support it, then I mean, God bless. Like I'm not telling you can't do what you want to do, but to say that it doesn't belong there or it doesn't work or it's some kind of fantasy, like no, that's just not, it's just not true. It's been vetted out in enough situations now that it does have some water to it. Again, if you don't want to do it, don't do it, but
And
it's
the funny
wrong, it's
thing is,
wrong.
too, to add to that is the very much reality of this world, in my opinion, is that from shooting down to gear, down to weapon selection, down to accessories you put on your weapon, a lot of that has come from the competition world. Let's just say optics on handguns straight up came from the
Huge.
competition world, bro. Yeah,
Huge.
that if anybody wants to shit on competition, that red dots are all the rage right now, came from competition. Magwells came from competition. These nice triggers people are putting in guns, they realized, hey, it kind of helps me put better, more accurate rounds on target, especially if I have squared away fundamentals. Giving somebody just that extra edge of a better trigger can give them a better edge when it comes to shooting, for a squared away shooter, that is. Compensators, I mean, God, and you've probably seen it too, dude. That does not end to the competition realm. I run a compensator on my handguns, I run comps and brakes on my rifles. In my opinion,
Oh
nobody.
no. Yeah, you're that guy.
I know. Well, but here's the thing. I have the option to throw a suppressor on if I want to, right?
Yeah, that's
So
just the
like
courteous thing to do. I
right,
think
of
we all
course.
agree.
Yeah, especially like in a shoot house, dude. Yeah, absolutely. But then that's why I have the option to. I think like when performance is on the line, nobody after is like, hey dude, comes up and shakes your hand. Hey, good job at managing all that recoil. It's like, no, dude, nobody gives you an award for managing the most recoil after shooting or after shooting on the range. It's like, what's the point? I want as minimal amount of recoil as I can, So
Yeah.
to a
Well,
certain extent.
and to all those points, it's not like you don't have to go from one side to the other completely. Like having a better trigger does not mean you're putting a necessarily a super light trigger in a gun.
Right.
For
Yes.
years, I know people
Yes.
were, well, I won't put a competition trigger in my duty gun. And it's like, and nor should you.
Right.
But it's not inaccurate to say that you can put an aftermarket trigger in and it can still be a better trigger than
Oh,
OEM
yeah, dude.
while not being a
Yeah.
competition trigger. Like would I put like a Geissele, like so I just got the SSAE X, the lightning bow, for my 16-inch gun, and that thing is oh, so
Yeah.
incredible. It's so nice. But would I put that in a duty gun? Like I don't know that I would necessarily. I now granted I've never been in a duty situation, so maybe my opinion's worth nothing in that conversation. But maybe something like the Advanced Combat Trigger the ALG makes, where it's just like a cleaner, a little bit nicer mil-spec trigger. Yeah, that I mean it's an enhancement. It feels better. And to me, it still falls in that category of you made an improvement beyond OEM without going full competition mode where it's, all
Good
about
middle
speed.
ground.
Yeah. And that was
Mm-hmm.
one of those things guys got all talked about that for a long time. And then all of a sudden now it's like, oh yeah, I'll totally let a cop run a 2011. It's like, have you played with a 1911 trigger? Because that's like everything you were against just a
Right.
short while ago. Not
Yeah.
that I'm against it because I 2011s are great. I think it's awesome. And one day maybe I'll have one. But for now
Dude,
I'm just
I just hopped in the 2011 realm, and it's pretty sweet. Coming from like the plastic fantastics of Glocks, and I've been a Glock shooter almost my entire career, man, of shooting. Like I started off, my dad bought me a Mark 25, like when I was like 19,
Oh,
and
nice.
I started shooting competition in three gun and two gun, like very young, like 19, 20 years old. And I always shot with that Mark 25. Then I finally got a Glock, finally put an optic on it, all that stuff, walked my way up. I've been running Glocks my entire career, man. And when I started shooting my 2011 now, it talk about a gun that almost just shoots itself, man. It's like it just floats. And I feel like, granted, don't get me wrong, you could put that gun in anyone's hand and they're going to be like, oh, holy shit. If you give somebody like one of those, I do believe that gear can, aid in skill. Like if it's quality gear, it can aid in skill, especially if that shooter is a squ like fundamentally a squared away shooter. They can be an absolute savage behind a 2011 because of the repeatability of that gun alone, man. It's just insane. It's 12
No,
and 6 the whole way, man. It's awesome.
it's the top of our current advancement. You know, technologically speaking, I think the tunability and just the like you said, the repeatability and the performance out of one of those is fantastic. I again, I think the price point though is, I mean, it's prohibitive. It's certainly prohibitive. And to your point, you know, like, I mean, I think if you put that in a new shooter's hands, like, they're probably going to do better than maybe they would with a Glock or an M&P or something. But fundamentals are fundamentals. And so as soon as you have to do anything short of just a couple rounds without any kind of contextual pressure, right? I mean, the wheels come off. So,
Absolutely.
what you're really talking about still is the same discussion. And I'm sure, and actually, I'd actually be interested to hear what your experience with some of those things has been, you know, training law enforcement and running classes like that with, you know, these fundamentals and the limited time that I think a lot of departments have with academies. It, I mean, yeah, a different gun could make things better, maybe, or it really is a
I
non-issue. I would
would
think it's a
love to
non-issue.
dive into that. That is a great topic to talk about, in my opinion. So,
Yeah, I mean, what you guys do with Defender Series, what has your been, what are your experiences been with that?
well, so I haven't been doing it incredibly that long, but at teaching as a whole, are you talking about just like teaching law enforcement?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah.
So teaching law enforcement, man, they're all haunted by their department, what their department teaches, and what the academy taught them. Like, for instance, let's just talk about grip. When I was in the academy, grip was taught at a 60-40 grip pressure. You know, like your shooting hand was supposed to, I'm sorry, your shooting hand was supposed to be at 40%, your offhand grip was supposed to be at 60. And while that can make sense to a certain extent, I understand what they were getting at. Like, hey, your offhand pressure should be more. That being said, like, have somebody shake your hand at 60%. They're going to be like, what? Like,
It's
there's
totally
no such
relative to
thing.
the person.
Yeah. Like,
Yeah.
it's just like, what? You know, even saying, hey, crush grip with your offhand, it's like, what does that mean? You know, you have to show people what that grip pressure feels like. And that never happened in the academy. Like, and I will say this too, dude. Like, I had an awesome firearms academy instructor. He was an FBI firearms instructor for like 10 years prior to coming over to
Nice.
our academy. The
Okay.
dude was a, he had, he actually, he had arthritis. So they were, he was an academy instructor when they were just shooting 40 cal. So his wrists and hands were just like destroyed because the FBI for a long time was shooting super hot 40 cal because I believe it was either the Hollywood shootout or the Miami-Dade shootout
The Miami
that
shootout.
that's what it was. You know, the whole when they went to the 9 millimeter and then switched over to 10 millimeter and
Yeah.
then 40 cal came of that, you
Yep.
know.
Yep.
So they were shooting hot 40 cal his entire career. I remember when he picked up the gun. It was like literally shaking. And
Ooh.
dude, at 10 yards, he would 10, 15, 20 yards, did not matter. With iron sights, he would punch out a B8 every single time. And like, you know, it's hard to go toe to toe with a guy like that, you know? So I had a pretty good firearms instructor going through. That being said, you know, he was still hindered by the state curriculum, which teaches 60-40. This push-pull method thing, you know, that makes no sense at all. I would say their law enforcement is sometimes hindered by what the state makes them teach, and they're also hindered by the guys that are currently in these spots. So a lot of times a firearms instructor role at a police department is often, whether people like it or not, it's a political role, okay? 9 times out of 10, the guy there is there because of he's been at the PD for et cetera amount of years. It's not nearly because he brings the experience to be there. I've been to quite a few PDs now where the firearms instructor was should not have been doing that. They should not have been,
Yeah.
you know, in that role. And unfortunately, it's like that across the board. I've trained with hundreds of thousands of cops at this point. It's the same thing. It's like, yeah, unfortunately, our firearms instructor thinks that this is the way, you know, like a lot of guys, older cops, military dudes, you know, we're known for being old and grumbly and sticking to our old ways. And that is very much how law enforcement is, man. Like, law enforcement is still, I think, about like 10 years behind the curve. That's why you're just now finally seeing red dots coming to law enforcement. Like in the area I'm in, there are very, very few PDs carrying red dots. And I think if you're not carrying a red dot on duty, you're doing your officers a disservice, especially just from a target focus standpoint. You should always be focused on whatever the shitbag is trying to kill you. And I think that's a huge hindrance to cops. I digress. Anyways, a lot of these guys are hindered by their firearms instructors. They're hindered by state curriculum because they're still teaching things that were relevant in 1990. CQB is very much like that. It falls under that same realm as well. Like when we were taught room clearing in the academy, it was like straight out of the Marine Corps handbook from 1995. Like,
Ouch.
left, right, fill a room, volume by fire, what's it? What's the saying? It's like, surprise, violence of action,
Oh, speed,
whatever.
surprise, violence of action, like the
Yeah,
three
like, which is not like a
bolt.
bad thing to say, right? Like, I very much understand that, but like, that
Yeah.
being the only way, it's like,
Yeah,
so.
it's there's a lot of nuance to it, and I'm not a pro, but
Yeah,
I
the
can tell you there's more
context.
nuance to it than that. Yeah.
Without getting, I don't even want to dive into tactics.
Yeah.
It's not my realm. So, but
No,
yeah, man, I mean, go
it's
ahead.
I think driven a lot by liability. That's why
Dude, yes.
there's
Oh my
a
gosh.
statewide curriculum. And yeah, I mean, I believe, right, they want the legal cover. So an officer involved shootings, right, they can say, well, I built my grip. They can articulate it or be trained to articulate it as is to the state mandated curriculum and explain that, this is what we did, everything by the book, so we're not culpable. And I understand that. To an extent, I almost agree with the idea they're chasing, except that it's like fundamentally flawed, because you can't, if everybody was built exactly the same, which we're not, but if we were, then you could apply something like that. If everybody was built the same, thought the same, and felt the same, okay, but we're not, so you can't. And I think that when we look at trying to put training in a vacuum like that, it's an impossible request because of how different everybody is person to person. The fact that that we that the fact that smarter people have not yet been able to penetrate the bureaucracy and find a different way, and I'm not trying to like point the finger or blame anybody. I'm just saying, how have we not addressed that yet with all the stuff going on politically and in the media, as well as just modern technology, right? How have we not, gotten to that point?
I think you hit the nail on the head. I totally missed that. I should like that was a very good point, man. When you talked about like litigation and suing and stuff like that, that is why a lot of the things exist gear-wise in law enforcement or even just teaching-wise. That is a huge thing that people blow over. And just to make it clear for the people that are watching, we are not shitting on law enforcement. I don't want to get too rah-rah about like cop stuff. But that being said, I'm in this trying to make a difference. Like I'm talking shit because I want to make a difference and I am making a difference as much as I can. And I'm very passionate about the fact that like what's being taught in law enforcement right now and in regards to firearms needs to change. And just from a very simple point of view, in the state of Ohio, if I'm not mistaken, the OPATA curriculum for firearms in general has not changed, I believe, in the last 10 years. And just from a informational standpoint alone, that is super fundamentally flawed. You know as well as I do, curriculum should always be evolving,
Now, is that,
monthly, yearly.
do, how, I guess, how do, or maybe, I don't even know if you know, with your insight on the training side as well as on the law enforcement side, do they have like a mandated amount of time where they should be reviewing that? Like, hey, we're on a 3-year cycle, so we review this every 3 years to make sure it's
I
current,
just
or?
recently heard because I'll be going to a pot of firearms instructor school in about a month, and I just recently heard that they are looking to change the curriculum up. And again, I'm not trying to shit on OPATA. They shouldn't be shit on, but in their defense, they probably have like 99 other things that they have to worry about right now besides the firearms curriculum, Because that is one thing that can be approved by a department, right? Like if you go to a squared away department, just like if you Once you leave basic training, you go to your unit. You know, they're going to start teaching you maybe a little bit more than just like grip sights and trigger, you know. So, in their defense, you know, I understand it from that point of view. But that being said, especially just from like a litigation standpoint, I'm shocked some of that stuff is in there the way it is.
Yeah.
So, I believe they're, from what I understand, they're trying to change it. Because, dude, I'll tell you what, like, I wish I would have brought a copy of the qualification down here with me. It's bad. And just to kind of give you an idea how bad it is, I believe at 10 yards, you have to be able to do a three reload three and 12 seconds.
Is that A zone or?
That's so it's called, they call it the preferred area. Rounds are supposed to go in the preferred area, but you can hit anywhere in this target. It's like it's very similar to the FBI like bottle target, if you know what that looks like. It's very similar to that, and there's like a little oval in the center. You don't have to put all your rounds in the little oval. They just have to be like in the bigger bottle. And quite frankly, Helen Keller could pass the qualification.
Yeah,
So
that's not
it's
hard.
not, yeah, it's
You
not
said
hard.
10 yards? 10 yards, right?
I'm pretty sure, yeah, it's definitely, it's either
Okay.
10 yards or less than 10 yards, but I know you get 12 seconds to do a three reload three, which is,
That's
I
fairly
might,
generous. That's like
dude, that's
that gives you
saying
like at
fairly
least eight.
generous is not
Yeah,
enough, but yeah.
that gives you at least like, I don't know, 6, 8 seconds to do the reload. Like it you know, because you don't really need to apply common marksmanship at that point. You just need to be able to hold on to the gun, basically.
And I it's I get it, man. You know, this is this the problem stems much deeper than just shooting, right? The problem stems from, like, let's just look at it from a personnel point of view. I mean, you know as well as I do, the military, a lot of employers, they've had to lower their standards in order to get more people in. It's not a secret that a lot of people don't want to be cops right now. Who can blame them? You know,
Yeah, it's
and in
rough.
order to kind of make that effective, you kind of have to have, you know, you're trading off one thing to gain another. So they kind of had to lower the standard. Well, that means either physical fitness requirements get lowered, you know, shooting requirements get lowered. These are all things that are going to hinder people from getting in. So naturally, a large organization has to make the tough decision to do that. And I really can't knock them for it. Like I understand it. But we're definitely hitting a point where it's like we can't go anymore. It cannot go lower than this. And I'm actually shocked that a lot of, in terms of litigation, I'm shocked a lot of lawyers have not gone after the OPATA curriculum. Like I'm actually very shocked.
It's probably based around a lack of knowledge. I'm sure they probably would have tried at some point. And it's unfortunate, honestly, because as we've all seen, as citizens of this country, right, with gun laws being what they are, it's never stopped them before.
Right. And dude, you know as well as I do, like cops are held to an incredible high standard on duty. Like people think that I'm supposed to be able to be, you know, Mr. Ranger SWAT sniper to shoot guns out of people's hands. Like you've read the comments on the Facebook or Instagram videos. Like people think we are ninjas out there, man, and that is not what, like most cops are not even gun guys. Which is fine, you know, that's totally fine. But if your job revolves around you carrying a firearm, you should definitely be very proficient with it.
Yeah, I mean, just basically have a, you know, like no, again, saying you have to be a super marksman, or anything. But there's a reasonable proficiency, obviously, and it's just and that's established right by everything we just said. It just needs to be, you know, updated. So, let me ask. So, when you run a class, do you like what do you do to start the course, like to evaluate a baseline? Because knowing that, everyone, when I say right now, like how do you start your range day? What's your baseline or cold start that you use to check where you're at for the day? Everyone has their own interpretation of what that is. But just like you said, most cops are not gun guys, and knowing that there really is only like what I think it's two qualifications a year and not a lot of budget around for
If you're lucky, I work for a very
extra
small
training.
department and we qual once a year. So,
Yeah, so knowing that people some of these guys may only actually deploy their firearm once a calendar year, twice a calendar year, what do you start with to try and get it, and what are you looking for when you do that?
I believe that any good drill, is based off of size of target, distance to target, and time. Any good drill we know in this industry is based around those three factors. So typically with classes, I do not start with anything demanding. I have people do 5 rounds in the A zone, reload, and 5 rounds in the credit card box of the head. I use an IPSC target when I teach. So the first 5 rounds will go in the big A zone. The next 5 rounds need to go in that little credit card box in the head. The reload has to be done in between. So I stage a mag with five, and the other mag obviously can be whatever it wants, but it's a five reload five. I have to look at my times. I believe 6 seconds in, or it's either 5 seconds and down is pro time. 6 seconds between 5 and 6 seconds is intermediate, and then 6 to 7 is okay. Anything above 7 is a, like a fail technically.
Okay.
If you get below 5 seconds, I give people a red line patch. And I only do this, and I don't think I explained the drill properly. I have people stand at 5 yards to do this. Okay. It is not like it is not super difficult in terms of hits and accuracy, but I want people to push the speed. Okay. Shooting accurately is it's not hard. You know that as well as I do. Like if you have the time to shoot accurately, it's not difficult. When you compound it with a time requirement, it then becomes difficult. So the reason why I like doing that, and I have people go from the holster, one, I'm seeing the proficiency of their draw. I'm seeing the proficiency of their grip they're building with their offhand. The reload in of itself is a you can tell like where someone's at with shooting just based off how they reload a pistol, in my opinion, from my experience on it. You know as well as I do. Like if you're hitting if it's taking you 2.5, 2 seconds to hit your reload, like I know where you're at as a shooter. The grip you build after you reload, which is debatably the hardest thing to do about a reload, is building the grip after. And then I'm having them press the gas on that big A zone target at 5 yards. So they're just, throwing quarter second splits at it. Then they have to press the brakes and be accountable to the head. And it's not a like a hard, like I guess you could call it qual or test or drill, whatever it is. Like as if you want to like. If you want to just blow it out of the water and go all gas, you could, but you're going to suffer in accuracy, So I think it's like close enough to where it's not hard, but because of the time, it's making it a little bit difficult. Like if you want to get a patch, which you that should be your goal, it's difficult. So that's what I have people do to start. And immediately it kind of gives me a diagnosing of every single student there, and from there, I'll try to keep certain people on a certain side of the line. Like I'll try to balance the left side of the line as like maybe guys that we need to work with. The right side of the line is, intermediate to advanced, whatever your contextual explanation is for, intermediate to advanced. But that's what I like to start with. I think it's simple. It's a good balance. I don't have people like do any of these crazy, quals. I don't ever bring B8s out in the range. I don't I'm not sitting here saying you should never do that, but I just think for what I'm teaching, it's not really relevant.
Not a big fan of the B8 target. Like I, for certain things, I know that they're a great one to use, certain thing. But I know some people, and to me, like we talked or we said a moment ago, talking about like the conversations that were had, like competition versus tactical. I think within the scope of just talking about shooting in today's world, we still have people who are hanging out 10 years ago where the B8 is king,
That was the
and you have
shit.
people
Yeah, that was
that
the
are.
shit.
And it's not to say it's a bad target for certain things, but like, I think it's there are better options out there for almost.
I
And this
love
is,
the. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
I just say that's just my opinion. Like, you can turn this off right now and tell me I'm an idiot, and that's fine.
No. I very much align with that. That being said, I don't have anything wrong with people that use like B8s or anything like that. I think if you really want to get intimate with your gun, get intimate with the trigger, grip sights and trigger, especially at like 25 yards plus, you want to shoot a B8. All right, dude, cool. Like I support that. That's just I don't need that type of ROI with my training right now. Right now, like I think the IPSC target is very realistic to competition shooters, and it's very realistic to like tactical shooters. I like to float in the realm of I like to kind of call myself like practically tactical. There are parallels I like to draw between the two because there's plenty
Sure.
of parallels with shooting when you start, getting down the nitty-gritty. So I think the IFTTT target is pretty freaking hard to beat in terms of, like, if you even just look at it from like a human anatomy standpoint, the IFTTT target's pretty legit. Like the A and C zone, like everybody knows, like
Yeah,
it's the money spot on a human body, So
it works. It works. It's not that there's not a reason to I don't know. I think that there's a reason why it's the widely accepted standard. And it's yeah, I mean, you can overlay some I like some of the ones where they put like organs and stuff on there, so you can kind of I like those for newer shooters because
Absolutely.
And that's one of the things I don't like about the B8 is guys will take a first-time shooter out there and they'll back them up, and at 25 yards they are just, hitting every like all over the place, right? And it's kind of damaging to people's confidence, right? Whereas with you have some of those, and I'm not saying that we should get used to accepting a lower standard. What I am saying is that in the context of trying to build up a new shooter and get them excited about doing this and wanting to come back, because after my first couple of range sessions, I did not want to go back. When I first started shooting, I was very much not happy. You can
I
well,
get
hey,
that.
you're aiming for the center box. Like, look, you still hit them here, here, and here. Like, that's still you're doing fine. You just got to work on it. It just takes time and effort, right? There's some value to that, I think, depending on the application. I'm not like advocating for making excuses for everybody listening, just to be clear.
Yeah, if you're doing your part at the range, like a B8 is not necessary for you to all of a sudden start building accuracy into like your range training. Like it's To me, it's its own separate sort of thing. I'm not shitting on people that use B8s. Let's just make that very clear. Like, if you want to use them, great. It's just not really applicable to what I want to teach people in the 8 hours that I have them. Like they can go do that in their own time. I'm there to teach people how to do the fundamentals at speed. Like I am very much into the realm of performance behind the fundamentals. Everybody has this mindset. Law enforcement is stuck in it. A lot of military guys are stuck in it. The slowest, smoothest, fast. There is no other term on this or saying on this planet that triggers me more than that. Like slow is slow, dude. Like things. I'm also a previous collegiate athlete. Things at no point in time in my entire collegiate career did we walk on the field and was like, and the coach was like, "All right, guys, we're going half speed today." Like
Based off that,
nobody.
can I
Yeah,
assume
like
it was football?
nobody does that. What's that?
Can I assume it was football since you
Oh
said walk on the field?
yeah, I played football. Yeah,
Oh, perfect.
tennis,
Perfect.
obviously, bro. Come on.
Yeah. So, because, and I have to ask because, you're in Ohio, are you now like a Browns fan?
This is gonna sound really funny. I don't watch sports at all, dude.
Oh,
E
dude.
even when I
Wait.
was playing
So,
college
wait.
football,
You
I never
left
watched
Michigan,
sports.
you played football, and the Lions are actually relevant now, and you're not here
I
for
don't. I don't watch sports at all. Even when I was playing college football, I never watched it.
Dude, you're like a unicorn. Somebody should like take you in a lab and study you. I think that's the first time I've ever heard that from a college football player.
Yeah,
I
I just
my two
yeah,
younger
that's it.
brothers played at Walsh down in Ohio for college football,
Okay.
and they're both like super about it.
Yeah,
One coaches me.
I played at Youngstown State for 2.5 years. It was Division One AA. Yeah,
Oh, nice. That's awesome.
it was a good time, man. And then shortly after that, I ended up joining the military like a doofus. So.
Oh, come on. I mean, everything happens for a reason. And then
No,
you end up,
I'm just kidding, man. Absolutely.
So once you go through your, do you call it a cold start, or I mean, how do you introduce it to the, because think, the
I
way
guess I
you.
just call it like an exercise. I mean, it's an exercise that can result in you getting a patch. Like I always tell people, like I want people to try to get the patch because, like I said 5 minutes ago, like if you were to shoot that qual and just solely focus on accuracy the whole time, it's not difficult. But once you start doing it at like if you start doing that at full speed, going for that pro time, it's not easy, dude. Again, I'll have to look at the times. It's either 5 seconds and under or 6 seconds and under. I can't remember off the top of my head, but I always like I write down everyone's time. I have everybody watch the shooter that's up because you learn by watching the shooter. You learn nothing by watching holes go on paper.
Is it mostly the reload that throws people?
The draw, the reload, and that's typically the two big ones I see. Like, and as well as I do, like I love doing that because as soon as I see you draw your gun, as soon as I hit see you hit a reload, like the things just start going off, like the red flags or the green flags. You know, like I immediately start getting an idea of, hey, for this, you know, the curriculum today, we either need to, you know, pump the brakes and go left or press the gas and go right, or we need to probably focus on sight picture and grip more. You know, like there's with things like that, it gives me an understanding of what to dive into. Because I am not a big person of like, I hate wasting people's time by talking in front of them for like 10 minutes. There, I do not like beating a dead horse. Like I only want to tell you what's relevant and then get you shooting. Like all my courses are 500 to 700 rounds. You did not show up on a range to shoot with me, to listen to me talk all day. Like you showed up to learn to put those things into practice and shoot. And if they're not for you, then you'll go to somebody else that maybe, you know, or gives you a product that works for you. Like I always tell people, shooting is an individual sport. And I think as a community, we've kind of forgotten about that. You know, like there is yeah, I'll just leave it there, but
Yeah, no, I mean, you're definitely right. And I've had people tell me, like buddies and stuff will send YouTube videos or shorts or reels or back and forth. And there's some of these companies out there, and they'll drop a reel of them, and it's just an instructor, right? Just talking and talking
Yeah,
and
dude.
talking and talking. And it's like, and sometimes it's warranted. Like sometimes you need to stop and gather the group's attention. Like I was in one class where that happened. And it didn't even take that long. Like the instructor literally took the rifle away from somebody because he so weird, like rifle either high port or low port, right? And we were doing like 180 and then gun up and two rounds on target. And this individual was definitely bringing the gun up as he turned, which
Oh, okay.
is obviously
Big
from a
no-no.
safety standpoint
Yeah.
less than desirable. And after like he got a warning. And then the next time it was, all right, dude, like what, like, because not only was he doing that, they caught him the second time when they caught him, he had like his gun was hot while he was, face back range. So,
Yeah.
took it from him, had said something to that guy earlier in class when he like just how he put his rifle down against the wall, it was on fire. And it's like, dude, like, come on, man. Like, I get nothing's gonna happen, but, we have to do this a certain way. And then those two instances. So, and even then, it's like, stop. Everybody pay attention to me. Like right now, this can't effing happen. And it's why, all right, now let's go back to shooting. It should never be a 20-minute dissertation on, how you're mounting the, like, there is no one instructor out there who is so eloquently spoken or so like masterful of the techniques that they're going to stop in the middle of a drill to address you for 20 minutes and then have you pick up that same drill. Like it, I can't think of anybody who has that profound a grasp on things above and beyond what everybody else does. Like, how many ways can you really shoulder a rifle? There's nuance to it, but like, here, this is your shoulder, this is your stock. Like, you don't need to talk about. I don't even know. I could.
Well, no, I get what you're getting at with that, Duke, because I love talking about grip when it comes to rifle. I love the fact that the mount has finally like starting to make its way to the being the most important thing when it comes to like the grip of the rifle. People have blown off mount for years, bro. Years. And I do understand why. You know, you have tons of like, you know, just from like my immediately first thought I see on the range that guys who typically have terrible mounts are SWAT guys. They get super used to like running the stock like an inch or two above their shoulder. And I get it because body armor can very much affect that, right? Like everybody wants to talk about like, hey, you're supposed to mount the rifle right here and direct with your eye or in between the chest plate and the shoulder pocket or the shoulder blade or in the shoulder pocket. Like I've heard a million different places to mount the rifle. And really the realistic thing is like I just said, one, shooting is an individual sport. You need to find out where your mount is, you need to put it into practice to find if you have the repeatability in that mount. If you do not have repeatability in your mount and your stock is bouncing out of your shoulder or your sights on target are doing all the zigzag shit, chances are you need to go back and self-evaluate your grip.
So wait,
And
are you saying there's multiple right ways to mount the rifle?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, I think when let me say this. I think when you implement gear into the equation, there can be more than one way. Because I will say this, like it can be, especially with like my duty vest, it is kind of a pain in the ass to put the rifle where, like with when I'm not wearing a vest, it's kind of a pain in the ass to put that rifle in the same place.
Well, and I only ask because I'm like, I'll tell you my opinion and then I
That's
let you
fine.
know what yours is. Like, I get a bunch of shit because I run a taller optic mount. Like, I run a riser, and guys are like, like Josh, and he's gonna listen to this and I mean, he's gonna get mad at me or shake his head, whatever, because I get all the
It's
time.
okay.
We go back and forth over like, he really likes an lower third. Like, he likes to like lay down over the gun. I mean, he doesn't literally do it, but I make fun
I
of
get
him
what you
for it.
mean. I kind
And
of
then
get that.
he gives me shit because I shoot straight up and like I have half the stock in my shoulder and half of it kind of not. And I run a Kinu from Overboard, so I'm at like a 2.33 instead of a 1.5. You can still shoot with relatively the same performance, and in a lot of instances we do. It's just two different flavors of the same ice cream, like.
Dude, I completely agree. Like, and I think that showing people the mount and how it's supposed to feel like and how it's supposed to look without, let's just say, a body armor on, I think should be done first, because like once you start throwing body armor on, it starts boiling down to how that person is built physically, and is there soft armor underneath your body armor? Are you wearing just a plate carrier? Because like, so for instance, like my first thought that comes to mind is like some of the females I've seen on the range, and this is nothing against them. Women are just kind of smaller than men when it comes to like shoulder width, hips, legs, all that stuff, right? And sometimes they're and even my vest when I first got into law enforcement sticks all the way out to the corner of my shoulder, So when it comes to them mounting the rifle, it is kind of screwy, and they have to play with it, and they have to figure out what works for them. And that's where I think like, saying there's only one way to do something is very wrong, And that's why I always say shooting is an individual sport. As long as you are getting desirable results on target, and if you do it at speed, full speed exploring, you're getting the same results. I don't really think there's anything wrong with that, because I will say, like, even with my mount, when I'm wearing body armor, it's more like in the pocket of the shoulder area. It's actually a little bit farther out, because my vest covers like, my man boob area. Okay, so I can't put my stock right here, and if I do, like, especially I have like a semi large chest, it mounts very weird, because my chest is also now pushing the gun out, or pushing the stock out. And even if I bump the stock in, that doesn't really do much, and I have the time and experience playing around with it, like to know, like, yeah, it just works better cheating it out. And
And
I can still run
I can
performance and
honestly, yeah, I can honestly, I understand exactly what you're talking about. And I think so many of us, well, okay, I would hope it's one of the reasons why so many of us go through different carriers, pieces of gear and stuff. Like, there's from a fit perspective, I started my first carrier, first real carrier was like a Slickster with the fair shoulder pads. And I was like, man, this thing's great. And like elastic cummerbund and it hugs my body and I love it. And I wasn't the biggest fan of it when I started shooting. Like, it wasn't bad, but I didn't love it. And then I moved to an AC1 and because I thought it would be different, and it really wasn't like, and neither were like bad, but they weren't ideal for me shooting. And then I ran a couple HRT carriers for about a year or so, and I love the fitment and like just like wearing them, they're very comfortable. But shooting, it was never quite what I needed it to be. I will say right now I run an FCPC, and that has just, and I think that's just because the shoulder straps sit just like half an inch like higher or closer on the like on the plate bag, or they're just designed in a way like it works, like it's comfortable and it doesn't get in the way when I shoulder the rifle, which obviously individual results may vary, but that's why that right now that's my favorite carrier out of like the small handful I've tried, because it works the best with, I put a B5 SOT mod stock on all my
Same.
rifles,
Yeah. Same.
and it works great with that. And I don't know if here's the thing is I don't really want to change the little bit of a cheek weld or chin weld I have, right, with how I mount the gun. I don't really want to sacrifice that for a slimmer stock to work around my carrier. So,
Yeah, I think there
and
is definitely a discussion to be had about like the mount and how it can change if gear is brought into the picture. Because like now, if like let's just say deeper in the military and law enforcement stuff, okay, now build a gas mask into the equation. Like,
Yeah.
do you think your mouth's gonna change? It might, you know, it might depending on what kind of optic mount you're running and stuff like that. You know, like it's just a discussion to be had. I'm not saying what I'm saying is gospel by any means, but what I have found is like I had the same experience. I switched over to using the Velocity System Scarer. Because I'm able to get a little bit more deeper into my chest clavicle area with my stock versus with my older vest, I had to base I was basically sitting all the way on the edge of my shoulder, you know, and I know like that's not good because it just created way too much bounce in the rifle. It was a horrible mount.
Yeah,
So
and that all carries through and translates into the hits you're getting on your target and the problems and issues that you're facing with the demands on accuracy. Because the first round is, I mean, and we talked about this too, like that first round is, it's not that hard. I don't want to say it's not that hard, but we were talking about, like, you don't really have to form a grip for that first round on something, right? So with it's almost the same thing with a rifle, if not exactly the same thing. It's that can, but if you're, I would think, again, never done it, but I would think that if you're in a law enforcement role and you get to the point where you have to deploy a carbine, you're probably not taking it out for one round. I mean, if you're really good, then maybe you are, but I'm gonna say that's probably not the case.
Yeah, I mean,
Typically.
well, it's not really a secret. Like most shootings involve more than one round being fired, you know, for generally speaking. There's plenty of data to show that too. Actually, you know it would be a great person to ask, man, is Nick with Velox Training Group. He does like a lot he's done a lot of good content about the mount of a rifle. And actually I'm probably after this, I'm probably gonna ask him about that, what his thoughts are on that. Because he's him and a few other people are kind of the ones who have pointed me in the direction of like the mounts being I'm not going to sit here and say the most important because that's kind of dangerous to say when it comes to fundamentals in shooting. But I mean, it's been very much underplayed the last 5 to 10 years of shooting. Everyone's been all about leverage and friction, you know, and leverage and friction only gets you so far with shooting rifle, you know. So because that at some point that right, like the reason why shooting rifle is so great is because it's connected to our body. That's what makes it so easy to shoot. So I'll probably talk to him after this and see what his thoughts are because I think he has a very good understanding of rifle to shoulder connection and I would love to hear what he thinks about it. So
No, I mean, is carbine training, do you guys do a lot of that on the law enforcement side, or is it not as popular? Yeah. When I had a buddy up here in Michigan who was a state trooper, he is no longer, but he didn't pass on or anything. He just got a better job. Just to be clear, he was
Good, good
telling
for
me,
him.
when he was there, he had the choice if he wanted to carry a shotgun or a carbine, and he had a shotgun. And then basically after his first actual incident where he had to draw his handgun, and I think it was actually out by like your neck of the woods, out by where you grew up, out past, like, people listening might know this, but like Romeo, so like, kind of sort of like the sticks, but not really. Sticks is where I'm from, but it was a long, long driveway, and the only thing for any kind of cover, and it's not cover, it were bushes, so like barely even concealment. And he's like, at that moment, I knew that I made the wrong choice, and I never wanted to have to deal with that ever again. So like, do you see, is it mostly carbine based training, just given how popular the platform and how affordable they've become?
So you're talking like we're talking like at a PD level?
Yeah.
No. No, I've been to like the previous departments I worked at. Sure. I that is gonna be more of individual department level sort of thing. I would say as a whole, there is definitely more focus being put on less than lethal and handgun in law enforcement than anything else. Now, like your SWAT guys or special unit dudes, like
Sure.
task force guys, they're definitely, you know, building the rifle into the training more so than anybody else. But I mean, even like where I'm at in Ohio with law enforcement, a lot of the guys that are getting their rifle training or just training in general, they're not waiting for their department to give it to them. Otherwise, they're not going to get it. They're doing all that stuff on their own. and which is more power to them. You know as well as I do, you cannot wait on your department to give you the results that you need. Like you need that training now, especially if you depending on where you're at in your journey, let's put it that way.
Yeah. No, I mean
So
it's with I mean and that doesn't have to apply just to PD. I mean, or at least the idea doesn't have to. I think something that I talked about this in my last episode I did, something that is incredibly frustrating for me is that like on the civilian side, if like here in Michigan, we don't get a lot of great firearms training that comes up here. And when we do, it's in like the northern part of the state, or you gotta do something special to get into it or whatever. So like why not find ways to bring people up into Michigan? Why not find ways to bring training companies into like guys will just say, oh, I would take more than just the class in my local range, but there's just nothing here. Or you'll have people saying, well, let's drive to Wisconsin and go take this, or let's drive to, Tennessee or, or wherever. And say, why not try and bring that training to you? Like, yeah, it's gonna probably take a while because most guys build their calendar out 6 months to a year out, whatever. But like, why not just do the little extra if you want it and you know you can get it, but you just have to work a little harder or maybe pay a little bit more money or something. Like, why not go do that and bring it to you? I mean, I could see the argument can be made both ways. Like, well, why don't you just pay the money and drive out of state? Like, well, why not bring it to your community and make people around you better? I think the principle of it is kind of the same. It's just, why not just do a little bit of extra work to put yourself in a better position?
The one thing I do want to add to this is in terms of like training and teaching, I see more of a push for handgun than anything else. And I think that is really due to the price of rifle ammo. I mean, dude, it's crazy for me to think about, especially like because I was super into shooting, like getting in a 20, 2016, 27 area. Dude, 7.62 was like 45 cents a round back then. And
Yeah.
now, understanding that every time I send a rifle round down range, it's like 50 cents, 50 cents. It's like, gosh,
It's so upset.
like
It's so upsetting. And
it
that's
hurts, bro. It
yeah,
hurts.
when people are like, oh, let's go take this class, it's only 700 rounds. I'm like, only 700 rounds?
And I think what people are finding out and the way it's being taught, thankfully, is that the principles are the same. The principles do not change regardless of the platform, right? Like we still want leverage and friction with our offhand. We still don't want to overgrip with our shooting hand because we still want that fluency and repeatability in our trigger. Like we want to be able to shoot fast, right? So if this shooting hand is super tense and gripping the shit out of the gun, we're not going to be able to do that. The only time like rifle really differentiates is the mounting portion of it, which I think is why people are finally starting to hammer on it. But I mean, the principles are the same. Like generally speaking, if you understand the fundamentals and the principles behind shooting a handgun, picking up a rifle for you is not going to be an issue. But at the same time, like you said earlier, there are nuances that are very different, very different. So like even just transitions with rifles and pistols, it's people tend to want to stay in their optic with transitions and rifles because it's connected to their body, right? So finding the optic alignment is not hard. But with handgun, like people do not fall in love with the optic as much. They tend to lead with their head and then bring the gun to it. With rifle, I find people tracking their red dot way more often. So it's nuances like that you kind of have to focus on and crush. But for the most part, I mean, the principles are the principles. Like they're the same across the board. And thankfully, like now it's kind of being taught like that as a community, and I hate to say this, man, but just from like an economical standpoint, even I've kind of like somewhat pumped the brakes on rifle training because I've hammered out more dry fire with rifle than anything else because it's like I dude, there is not a I believe there is not a single person on this planet that loves shooting more than me. I fucking love guns, man. That is what got me into training. I absolutely f I nerd out. I love firearms. But god damn, dude, money is a thing. Like when you're 50 cents around per trigger pull, and if you're into like precision stuff, it's now like $1 or $1.25. Like you really have to be getting the ROI out of your training. I am very big on that. Like I am There needs to be ROI behind what I'm doing at the range, especially now because I keep my class cost low. It's like 200, 250, depending on where we're traveling to. And that's because these guys are going to be spending another $200 to $400 in ammo, and it's like, yeah, easy, especially if it's like a rifle class. So Very much big on the, if you can hammer out pistol, if you understand the fundamentals and principles of pistol, it'll translate to rifle. There's just nuances you have to pay attention to.
And the dry fire thing is huge. Like, it's still crazy to me in 2024, even how popularized the idea has become through the internet, right? There are still people that either refuse to dry fire, that people think that's
Oh,
going to
I
damage
know.
their gun. Like, I shoot and train with guys who don't dry fire. They would rather pay money to go to it. And I'm not saying, like, I'm not at all saying you shouldn't go to classes. What I'm saying is you are leaving a lot of, you're leaving a lot on the table if you don't. Like, I mean, it doesn't have to be a ton. You don't got to like jock up and put your carrier and your belt and your special pants on and everything. Like, you know, you can literally just put the rifle on. I mean, use your sling, right? Whatever, and just work on sight picture, picking up the sight picture, just work on sight picture and safety manipulation. Like, all of that, like, that alone will make you way more consistent in those, you know, those two things, obviously. But that is, a sight picture is a huge thing. And if you don't believe me, like, I challenge everyone, go find a new shooter at the range or somebody who's never shot a rifle before. Give them your rifle, give them a red dot, don't give them a scope, don't be a dick. Like, and ask them to just go from a low ready to one round on target and watch how long it takes them to pick up that dot. Like, it's not an automatic thing. So yeah, like, the little things, like, I'm huge on that stuff. And I used to get shit online, like, posting some of those videos. Like, there's no reason to only train your safety manipulation. I'm like, there's every reason to just to work. It needs to be automatic.
Yeah, dude. I mean, when you start getting into like the tactics realm of firearm stuff, like safety manipulation is 100% a consideration. Like 100%, especially when you're working around other cops. And every bullet you're sending down range is your baby and there is a lawyer attached to it. Like that shit has to, like you said, it has to be like, I call it system one thinking. Like it has to be just, it's ingrained in you from the start. As soon as I break cheek well from that optic, safety's going on.
Or even just, you know, like, everyone wants to run around on the range with their buddies. It's cool, it's fun. Like, yeah, but try being one of the guys standing there observing and then watching yourself get flagged with a rifle. And then watch yourself get flagged with a rifle and you find out when the guy gets back running his circuit or whatever that his gun was on fire
It's
the
on
whole time.
fire. Yep.
And it's
Yep.
like, you know,
Like,
and they're
fuck.
like, oh, but dude, I was out of ammo. I'm like, are you sure? You know, was it a double feed? Did you feel it locked back? Like,
Yeah,
you know.
it's an argument to be had. I think there has to be an understanding. I mean, this is a bold thing to say, especially in today's world, but like if my, like for instance, let's talk about reloads. Whether it's real life or on the range, like if my intent has not changed from the last round I fired to my reload to the round I'm about to fire, there is no need for me to turn my safety off in the middle of a, or turn my safety on mid-reload. To me,
Dude,
it
that's how
does
I
not,
feel. I've
yeah,
had
to
people tell
me,
me
it
that's
does not
wrong.
change anything. It's like, dude, my intent has not changed. Okay. If you're, like, could you make the argument, like, you could slip, pull the trigger? Sure, man. Like, it's, as well as I do, you can dream up any scenario you want. And, and you can make sense of any argument you want. But, like, based off my training, my experience, like if my intent has not changed from reload to, or I'm sorry, from empty gun to now reload, there's no point turning the safety on, especially if you're going right back into shooting. And you can make the argument too, like, do you turn the safety under Glock when you reload? Like, no, you
Of
don't.
course, every time.
Yeah,
Yep.
every time, So it's like, and dude, I will say, like, there are guys who are die hard to their grave. Like, safety's coming on as soon as I break cheek weld, it's coming on. And I agree with that to a certain extent. But I mean, like, look at three gun shooters, man. That safety goes on and they're the whole match. They don't turn it back on, or the whole stage. They don't turn the shit back on.
Well, and if you're doing some of those other things correctly and in a safe manner, so transitions, or if you're yeah, I guess it's a little bit different if you're you know, putting the slinging the rifle behind your back to go, you know, put contact on a suspect or something. You, in that case, I would say you should probably put a
Oh,
safety on because
hell yeah, dude.
your intent
Hell
has
yeah.
changed. But if you're transitioning to your pistol, like, no, I'm not gonna, like, you know, with my support hand keep the gun up at firing height
Oh,
and
that's a
just
good
drag it
point.
out to my side and then drop it and then go to my handgun. Like if transitioning correctly, the first thing is the gun comes down so you're able to see everything in front of you, right? And I mean, in a perfect world,
I
anyway,
get what you're
but
saying. Yeah,
yeah.
I get what you're
So
saying.
like,
Like,
it kind of negates the point, not really negates it, but it kind of it takes something away from that argument of it should always be unsafe. It's like, well, it's pointed in a safe direction if we're still talking about rules of firearm safety. And in that situation, is my greatest priority the safety of a foot or something next to me? I mean, or is it to continue putting rounds on a bad guy? And I know I sound like a little bit of an asshole saying that, but that's just how I feel about it. In that moment, my greatest concern is whatever
getting more
aggressor.
rounds.
Yeah.
And in your defense too, like, context is everything when discussing these sort of things. And I address this when I talk about rifle to pistol transitions. If your gun goes empty and it's not, like, if you're suddenly shooting and now the gun is not shooting anymore, I mean, chances are the gun's empty or you have a malfunction. And can you turn the safety on if the gun's empty? Yes. If you have a malfunction, if you get a click and no bang, you cannot turn the safety on. Okay. So you're going to either be sitting there playing with it, or you're going to make a decision to sling a gun that's on fire and pull your pistol. Like, to me, the way I look at it is just merely as simple as what I have in my hands right now is not working. I need to go to something that is working. And some people will say it's an attempt, like you attempt to sweep the safety. Sure. For me, if the gun's empty, I don't. When in the purpose of a transition and for speed and all that, like, I don't see the purpose of throwing the safety on. Like, bullets aren't going to just magically land themselves in the gun. If there's a malfunction, like I said, you can't turn the safety on. Now, if the gun's loaded and you need to transition for whatever reason that is, I don't know why you would do that off the top of my head. Yeah, the safety should probably come on, because then you know as well as I do, when you're jocked up wearing all your cool pants, your battle belt, your gear, your radio headset, your helmet with your $12,000 nods, like, shit happens. It's very, especially with 45 degree throw safeties, it's very easy for something stupid to happen,
That's why I got rid of my bad lever, honestly, because I was just dry practice. I would transition and I turn the gun inboard when I sweep the rifle over, and I would fucking catch that stupid lever on shit all the time. And I would go to transition my pistol, and as soon as I dropped that rifle, it would catch on something at my belt or something, and it would pop that bad lever and send the bolt home. And I'm like, well, fuck, so I know a lot of guys love the bad lever. I personally, for that reason alone, I got rid of it. I was like,
I've heard that before, man.
I'll just work
I've
around
seen
it.
people like ND with the bad lever as well. And let me just say this too. Like, that does not mean the bad lever. I think Parker Mountain makes something like the bad lever as
Yeah,
well.
they make one of their own. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's like, I'm not shitting on those. They're useful for a reason, and they sell for a reason. But just like you said, like, for some people, they don't work. And for the application of what you want to use a rifle, if you find that a piece of gear is not working out for you, then you have every right to switch it out.
Yeah, I mean, and it's not, I don't think either of us are saying, like,
No,
the
I just
whole
want to make it
discussion.
clear. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, if you can be as proficient while flipping that safety on that extra step, if you feel it's necessary, then party on, man. I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying that,
Absolutely.
like, I expressing personal opinion.
Yeah,
And
no, and that's what this is all about. Shooting is an individual sport, baby. I'm all about it.
I mean, and
So.
guys, like, super, I mean, you've seen it online. Like, guys get like massive cases of heartburn over something like that. I've had the line like, you're not a true professional if you don't
My
flip your
God.
gun onto safe when you're doing a reload.
I know.
It doesn't take any extra time at all. I'm like, yeah, I mean, maybe, but maybe not. Like, for me, I tried it and I worked on it for a while, and I always struggled with, how I had to move my hand or reposition my hand to try and like engage that safety, just to, then switch and start reloading. And it's like, if I know the gun's empty, I know what the gun feels like when it goes to bolt lock. Yeah, I just, like, we
Me and
just went
my, I have a buddy out in Colorado. His name's
around.
Mike, and he's has a very long, military career with training with a rifle. And me and him got in the discussion of, like, safety manipulation when it comes to reloads and transitions and stuff. And he does turn his safety on in between reloads, and I will say it does not. I don't think it really hinders his performance. And I guess what I will say is it boils down to what you train. Okay. Like, Especially some of these military guys, like if it's beat into your head from day one, like, hey, you need to throw this safety on, whether it's regardless, whether it's right or not, you're gonna do that to avoid experiencing pain, i.e. being pulled off the range and smoked to death, right? So, he's become very proficient at to the point where I don't really think it hinders him even like under a shot time. That being said, a lot of people are typically not at that skill level, like they don't have that that much time behind the gun. And I think that throwing that safety on can hinder them in terms of speed. I don't know about you, but like I like to do everything as efficiently and as fast as possible as I can. That being said, it has to be done correctly under the right context, So for me, like I agree, man. I'm not really a big safety guy when it comes to reloads or transitions under the right circumstances. Under the right circumstances, let's just emphasize that. But there are guys out there that because they train it so well, it doesn't matter. And that's kind of like the middle of the road. And this is like, is one way right or wrong? No, it's not. But I mean, shit. I think that not having to worry about the safety on a reload or a transition, like if the gun's empty, it at least where I'm at in terms of my training, I think it definitely speeds me up and not having to worry about it.
Yeah, I
You know,
mean, if you can
let's put it
be,
that way.
if you can be proficient and safe, I really don't care. Like, as long as you're not violating any safety principles, and you're still efficient or pro and proficient, like, if it makes you happy, do it. And I mean, barring something like if you have an agency or a team SOP where you have to do it, and then you, I mean, like, suck it up and get over.
Absolutely.
Like, could I work through it? Yeah, I'm actually confident that I could work through it, and I just have never felt the need. You know, and I consider to be reasonable context and circumstances. And situation dictates, the environment dictates. So, like, yeah, if I had to duck behind cover and I'm in close proximity to three of my buddies, yeah, I might stop and take the extra second to make sure I'm on safe if
Right,
I'm.
dude. Yeah. Okay. So that's a great point. Like again, like what we just said, context is everything. I think that like, I mean, God, let's look at pilots, dude. Pilots are flying through the sky at Mach Jesus, and they have like 100,000 buttons in front of them. If they can figure out how to do that stuff with the reaction time they have and the time frame they have, I think that like being a reasonable, prudent person, you can like differentiate. Hey, when I'm supposed to turn my safety on versus off, type of thing. Like what you just said. Like if I let's just I know this is a super controversial topic, but like let's just throw vehicle tactics into the mix here. Like when we're like doing VCQB and all that type of stuff, and you want to start stacking pillars and other guys are around you, like I would venture to say that safety manipulation is a big thing, just like orientation of the rifle is at that point, or pistol, whatever it is, So, yeah, no, I completely agree, man. You just hit it nail like you hit the nail on the head. Like context is everything. So,
Yeah, it's, I mean, it comes down to it. Just being a strong thinker is going to help you and serve you better in those moments than anything else. Like, at any rate, man, we're coming up on time here.
Oh,
This has
shit,
been
okay.
awesome. I mean, yeah, it doesn't feel like it, but we're actually getting pretty close to 90 minutes, and
Okay.
it, like I said, been outstanding.
Yeah,
Would love to do
awesome.
it again. Certainly would love
Let's
to
do it
do it
again.
again.
I'm down. Let's do it again.
If people have questions, if they want to look into your teaching or your classes, or they have questions on some of the stuff we talked about, where are you at on social media? Where can people get a hold of you? How can they reach out?
Yes. So, my Instagram is BazookaJake71. My other Redline Consulting Instagram is Redline Consulting OH, and then Defender Series Training Group, I believe, is just the entire name in the search bar. You'll be able to find them. They'll be able to answer your questions, or at least point you in my direction if you want to ask me directly a question. I very much support in people asking questions and reaching out to me if they have something they want to talk about. Like even the stuff we discussed here, like nothing here I'm set in stone on any topic that we talked about. Like I'm very much for getting it out there, talking about it, getting down to the nitty-gritty of what the right and wrong is, and I'm open and willing to talk about anything with anybody. So by all means, guys, reach out if you got questions for sure.
Fantastic, man. Well, I appreciate you making the time, man. I know we rescheduled a couple times to get it, but hey, we talked about it before we started recording. That's just tacos sometimes, and certainly worth the wait. And I'm sure a lot of people got a lot of good information out of this, so appreciate it. And I will be in touch, sir.
All right, man. I just want to say I've enjoyed this thoroughly, man. So thank you for having me on.
Absolutely, man. Likewise. Seriously, I did have no idea going into this conversation that Jake was actually from Michigan. I know we kind of buried the lead on that very beginning of the discussion, start of the interview, whatever you guys want to call it. But super cool. Not everybody in Ohio is totally awful. That's so cool. And of course I'm joking, but I hope you guys enjoyed the discussion. As somebody who's dedicated to teaching and training and is actually, been out there, done these things as somebody working in law enforcement and is moving into the firearms industry and whatnot. It's just a great, great opportunity to have a great discussion with Jake, and hearing some of the stuff he said. Obviously, he and I think are I want to say in lockstep, but we're obviously in agreement on a lot of it. Anything from some of the safety selection to just some of the philosophy things around gear and why we run things the way we do or how we think about things. Like you can tell that there's just there's alignment there, So it's cool to at least for me to hear that. At least to some extent, I'm on the right track with some of my thinking, some of my feelings, right? But also, I love hearing how people end up in this community and what gets them over to teaching and the journey that some folks have taken. Jake moving out of like the private sector really into, I mean, it's basically still a private sector, but moving into a firearms industry job, like an actual job that makes money, not like the job I have here running this podcast. Is really cool. I'm happy for him. That's outstanding. And I seriously I look forward to, having him back on. And honestly, we talked about this last week and we mentioned a little bit in this week's discussion. Maybe that means that if you guys are listening and you're in the Southeast Michigan area, stay tuned. But maybe we get the guys from Defender Series up into Michigan from Virginia Beach to teach some firearm stuff or to teach a CQB class or something of that nature, right? We've had Troy on two different discussions, two episodes, right? And then now Jake, like honestly, good dudes, like them both a lot. Looking forward to the second discussion with Jake. But the connections made in this community, whether it's just a student instructor relationship or a peer-to-peer relationship, whatever that may end up looking like, it's so cool, man. And I implore you guys, it's one of the best reasons you can get out and start taking classes is you find that it's not really these dudes that teach, or at least I'll say most of the dudes out there that teach classes, they are just people like you and I. And a lot of instances, you can build some great relationships and some strong friendships. It's a very cool feeling. And they're just as you're not defined by what you do for a job. A lot of these people, I mean, some are, and it's kind of cringy, but a lot of these people are not completely defined by the fact that they are a firearms trainer. They have other lives and history and family and stuff that led them to where they are in life, and just as all of us have. And it's really cool when you start building those connections, and we see it, I think, a little bit too often where we have folks buy into a particular brand of karate or training company or whatever phrase, right, you want to apply to this, but guys go down a rabbit hole and they only want to subscribe to one methodology. Now, that's not to say, that you should go learn anything and everything and then sort through all the shit on your own. If it's actual literal shit, you definitely shouldn't. And, and Jake and I talked about some of that stuff when we got done recording. Obviously not all of it is stuff we want to disclose publicly, but had a great discussion, and like I said, he and I think we approach things very, very similarly. Obviously he's a much better shooter than I am. But the way we think about things is in alignment. I'm not insinuating that we are on equal footing in terms of skill. But that's okay. That's kind of how the world works. I'm sure if I were to drop a microphone in front of him, he may not be the podcast host that I am, which is also insinuating that I'm good at this. And maybe I am. I don't know. I've been doing it for a couple of years now. I should at least be, at minimum, be not bad at it. But at any rate, you guys, like I said, I enjoyed the discussion. I hope you guys enjoyed the discussion, most importantly of all. And I urge you guys to reach out to Jake. I know he's active in the region. I would say, the Ohio area, but I'm going to say the region. So if you're in like the Ohio, Pennsylvania area, or even maybe even further out, right? Maybe Virginia, because that's where Defender Series is based out of. If you're, an LE agency and you're looking for somebody to come in and run a class, reach out, man. I mean, you guys would be so surprised how often in this life, and specifically in this community, just by reaching out and asking the question, you get the answer you're looking for. Now, I'm not saying if you reach out to a company and ask for free shit, they're going to give it to you. But if you reach out with questions, if you reach out, well, you know, hey, can I bring a class to where I'm at? Do you guys, will you travel? I mean, you probably won't get a no. You'll get, hey, we'd love to. This is what it's going to take. This is what we need facility-wise. And then, you know, after that, they'll probably put together a number for you. And then it's on you to try and figure it out and maybe market it a little bit to help fill it if you're trying to establish a regional footing for people to come to your state. Like Michigan, I've said it before, Michigan, I think, with the exception of maybe one or two companies, Michigan kind of sucks for training, which is why we work really hard here to bring more content out to obviously people here that can listen to this, but also bring companies like Orion Training Group up to Michigan. And there are more in the works. There's more planned. There's more guys that I've talked to and have connections with that I know are outstanding and passionate educators that would love to get up to Michigan. Working on facilities is definitely, it's the biggest struggle. You know, the range that we use for shooting that would be great for it, unfortunately does not allow outside training companies to come in. Yeah, I got that bombshell last week. That was pretty crummy, but it happens. So, the fight rolls on. You know, you put the effort, put the time in, and that's how you change community. It's a ever evolving and ever growing process, but that's totally different subject. Jake is an outstanding dude. Highly recommend you guys reach out to him. If you got questions, if you just, you know, follow his page and like his photos and everything, or his work with Redline, which great, great company doing awesome media and work there. But I mean, that's it for me this week, you guys. Like we talked about in the intro, you know, we got stuff coming down the line. We're wrapping up the year strong, and who knows what's going to happen. You know, we have the election in less than a week. But, you know, this is going to go up on Wednesday, so in less than a week, officially, we will have our next presidential election. And yeah, I mean, we will hopefully, at the time of our next recording, maybe even have an answer as to who that president may be. And we'll see what happens. That's all we can do is be as prepared as possible and hope and pray for the best in terms of everything else. So hope you guys enjoyed it. I really appreciate you all sticking around, hanging out, listening, and following. If you guys aren't, and by some miracle you are still listening to the podcast right now, please go check out the YouTube channel, like the videos, subscribe. All those things help us tremendously. That's a huge push, if not our biggest push for next year. If you guys are not subscribed and you're listening to this on whatever podcast platform, please go ahead and hit that subscribe or follow button. That helps us even more in terms of the stuff that we're doing here. And also check out our Patreon page. And if you guys feel inclined, you know, check it out, sign up. So thank you guys again, and that's all for me this week. You guys stay safe out there. Have a good time. And until next week, like we always say here, work hard, train smarter, and be prepared.